morning and welcome to the Green Country Gardener Program with our expert, Larry Glass. Stay tuned for a free hour of fun and free advice to make that garden and that lawn look great. The Green Country Gardener Program is brought to you by Green Thumb Nurseries and Greenhouses, Peter's True Value Hardware, Kelly Banks Tree Service, and United Reynolds.
And a good Saturday morning to you. It's time for the Green Country Gardener, 8:09. We got Larry Glass in the studio with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I had the post-Thanksgiving sleepies.
Oh, you and me both, Larry. You and me both. What about you, Kevin?
Oh, let me tell you, I had to get to bed last night. I was wiped out. The turkey just does it to you.
Does it to you.
What's that stuff in there? What's it called?
Yeah, something like that. Triclopine or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Well, he just bam.
I really think it's kind of a myth.
But I did my annual Thanksgiving morning. You know what I did, Larry?
Right.
I did it.
I saw the black smoke.
That's right. I had my hedge trimmers out, and I was cutting those roses. All the roses, but you start whacking.
Yeah.
And hauled them back to the burn pile. I even cut the Rose of Sharon down. I said, that thing is too close to the house. I don't want it there anymore. Larry told me already that I can just pull it out and plant it anywhere. And
throw it in the ground.
Throw it in the ground and it'll live.
We've moved Rose of Sharon in the heat of the summer in the past. And they sit there and they look like a bunch of dish rags in the wind for a couple days. They just pop back up and they do just fine.
So I'm going to tie my tractor on it and jerk it out.
Well, and it'll live for sure then.
And then
leave it out of the ground for 3-4 days.
And then
it will survive. But if you try your very hardest, coddle it, baby it, trend it, it'll die.
I'm just going to tie a chain on it and jerk it out.
Yeah.
Rose of Sharon.
Yeah. Now dig a hole and just throw it in it. What do you think?
Green side up.
Green side up?
Yeah.
Well, there's not much left. It's only about that tall now. I took that chainsaw and just...
Sounds like a good Thanksgiving tradition.
My Thanksgiving, I get up and after I leave here, I go back home and I get the hedge trimmers out and I start cutting those rose bushes.
Yep.
You know, I forgot to. What? I just now remembered I forgot to. No. Is it too late to cut them now?
Cut what?
Rose bushes.
Not really, no.
It's not Thanksgiving.
We've had a good hard freeze, and they're really kind of dormant at this point.
But it's not Thanksgiving.
No, it isn't, but it was 21 degrees last night, so the night before last
night. I forgot two of them out there on this little mound.
Oh, they'll be all right, yeah. I cut mine in August, and then again in the wintertime, too.
You do?
Oh, yeah. August, you whack them back to nothing in August. They come back looking so nice in the fall.
Do they?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, maybe I'll try that. Yeah. What day in August?
Just say my birthday, Larry.
His birthday.
Okay. Soon we'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, some people actually, they've had very good luck with knockout roses. Cutting them way down. I mean, just to
down to the ground.
Down to the ground. They as they grow older, they get the stems get kind of corky.
They do.
And they get unproductive. So you really need to cut those back. Now it's the knockout rose is a unique plant. I mean, unique meaning it's same on top of it's not grafted. In other words, it's a floribunda rose, and it's just one single plant. There's no grafting involved with the knockout rose. And actually, we have some dwarf knockout roses.
They're called drift.
Dwarf.
Drift.
No, there is a dwarf knockout. It's like a miniature rose. Makes this tight little bunch. It's really quite nice.
Really?
We have a few of them now. We'll have plenty of them.
I did cut my drift roses back too,
yeah.
Larry.
Yeah, you got to cut those back too.
And
they're a floribunda. They're true from top to. And my fairy rose is blooming right now.
And I've got, you know, my azaleas are blooming right now.
Yeah.
I have an azalea that's blooming.
And you got Spanish moss hanging from your...
No, I don't have that, but I wish I did. And
yeah, the encore azaleas would be a bloom at this point.
Is it dry, or have we got enough moisture in the ground, you think?
The moisture is good. If your plants are well-established, the moisture is just fine. But on your new stuff, you want to be aware of what's going on and water it occasionally. I was on the way to work this morning, I noticed some sprinkler systems going, which is not a bad thing. It is kind of dry, especially if you fertilize your fescue grass. You might want to water it in. But generally, irrigation systems are winterized at this time of year.
I need to turn mine off today.
Yeah, and then you need to just water by hand your valuable things. Water. I wouldn't worry about the grass.
What about my live oaks?
They've been in the ground long enough. They don't need any extra water. I mean, you're flat out there. I mean, it's not going to. But we'll dig a hole and see how deep. Check your moisture. And the moisture.
Are we having a zinger this year? We had a zinger last year.
Oh, don't tell me about that. But
boy, everything died practically.
Awful. Oh, geez.
I just figure if my live oaks made it last year,
they'll make it.
They're going to make it through anything.
And I think that's primarily because we had some precipitation enough prior to that to make it. And they're somewhat tempered by the previous cold spells.
I'll get some more mulch and pile it all up around them.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
Anyway.
That was a really strange cold spell, because some plants that you won't expect will survive a cold like that did very well. And some plants that you would expect didn't do well. And I really think it's a cultural thing and how much water they have at the time.
What about the hawthorns? None of them made it.
Hawthorns. The Indian hawthorn.
Indian hawthorn.
Raphiolepis. Yeah.
It's rough on them.
I know, that's terrible. And the lower petalums didn't make it too. That was the introduction we were bringing in. They had some that were supposedly zone 6.5 to 7 lower petalums. And they're a very good substitute for, say, the barberry. They give you some purple leaves. But they just couldn't handle that 500 below zero cold spell.
500 below.
If the temperature would have dipped just that low and come back up, it would have been all right. But
stayed for 2 weeks.
I know, golly. We did some telephone improvements at the nursery. And we had to dig a trench in the ice. And it was, I've never had to do that here before. Maybe 4 inches of freeze on the soil at the most. It was a foot deep.
Okay.
We're out there with picks and sledgehammers digging that. We got it in, though.
All right, I got to go spray my Roundup, Larry.
All right. Yeah.
That's today.
Thank goodness the wind's out of the north.
I know. Not going to have much wind, so I'm going to spray Roundup on my yard, the outer yard.
Be sure to use your target pests to have some hair on them. So, in other words, the leaves have your henbit, chickweed, and all that. They're kind of hairy. And the Roundup, if you don't put a surfactant in it, it tends to bounce off and really not be a very effective.
Put some soap.
Put some soap in it, or a surfactant. That
soap works.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much, does it?
No, Roundup, anything that hits the ground on Roundup is a complete waste. So just
I know, but doesn't take much soap.
No. So to be sure you spray it judiciously. Use a fairly low pressure. And it'll be fine.
Larry. I get that. I've got that gasoline motor on there and booms, and I just start spraying.
You took the engine out of a Maserati to put in your sprayer. Exactly.
I can spray that thing. I just have at it.
I hear those 12 cylinders roaring in the distance. He's spraying his henbit.
And I will. I'll get rid of that henbit and all this. I won't have those pretty purple flowers in the fall.
Oh, come on. That's a Bartlesville tradition.
I know. All right. Happy Thanksgiving.
And we won't have a dandelion festival at your house. So.
That's right.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
You're listening to the Green Country Gardener. It's 8:17. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Tim from United Rentals. I want you to know we have any rental need that you could possibly have at a competitive rate with excellent service. So if you have a project coming up on the weekend that you need a boom for, you need a water pump, a trencher, a mini excavator, we can take care of you. You pay a one-day price, you keep it the entire weekend, you're not in a rush, it's a great deal. Come see us, give us a chance to take care of you. You can give us a call at United Rentals, 918-333-9333. 9580.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is getting busy and getting ready for the holidays. You'll find new shipments of pansies and flowering kale. Get ready for the holidays with amaryllis bulbs and Christmas cactus that they have available. And check out their new shipments of trees and shrubs. Right now is a great time to sow fescue seed and apply pre-emergent for winter weeds. Come see what's new at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5 Sunday.
Food is the subject on the Dining Guides between 11 and noon Monday through Friday on sister stations 100.1 KYFM and 104.9 FM KREG. Learn about Wheezy's Cafe, Szechuan Chinese Restaurant, and KFC, all in Bartlesville, CV's in Dewey, and Copan Restaurant and Truck Stop. The Dining Guides on 100.1 KYFM and 104.9 KREG.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. I'm Garrett Giles. We got Larry Glass with us. Numbers to call if you have any questions for Larry, 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. Larry, it's still a good time to do some digging, right?
You bet. This last week I dug up my elephant ear bulbs. They actually survived last winter, but I'm not going to take a chance this year.
No chances.
So I dug them up. They're in a cardboard box in the garage, an unheated garage, in between the two cars up front. So I might have smashed elephant ears on.
Smooshed. Smooshed them.
But the important thing is to store them in a box or something like that that won't hold water, because you want them to dry out a little bit between the times. And also the cannas, today I'll probably dig up some of the canna roots. They survived too. I didn't expect them to survive last winter, but they did. But I'm going to dig up a bunch of them this year. The soil is real shallow where I live, and they're really close to the surface. So it's a miracle they survived last year.
It's a miracle anything survived last winter.
And me too. Jeez.
it
was so cold.
Well. Yeah, it was freezing.
But anyway, also your banana trees, you want to dig them up too. If you have some banana trees, some people do. They're really decorative around the pool. They look really cool around the pool. So you want to treat them like you do cannas or elephant ears. Just dig them up and cut the top off and put them in a box in an attached garage. They should survive okay. Then put them back in the ground. So anyway, time for that too. I have some castor beans. I cut those down and saved the seeds for next year too. They got all frozen off. So a lot of stuff.
Really, yeah, bananas, castor beans.
Time to plant trees and shrubs, of course. It's a very good time to plant trees and shrubs. The ground is still relatively warm. And you can tell it's warm because there was a sprinkler system running on the way over here. And if the ground were frozen, it wouldn't be running.
Yeah, the sucker would not be working.
Yeah, right. So the ground temperature is still pretty good. So it's a good time to plant some trees and shrubs. They will get their root system established very well that way. And we also have to think proactively on that, in that now being a good time to plant them, in that they will have a root system prepared for the heat next summer.
Right.
So spring isn't necessarily the best time to plant trees and shrubs, because they have to work real hard to get those roots established in a relatively cool ground in the spring. So if they were planted in the fall or right about now, the root systems are still growing and they will have some established roots for the heat next year. So good time to plant those trees and shrubs too. Okay. Fertilize that fescue grass. It's actively growing right now. It's a cool season grass, so you want to fertilize it real well, and keep the mower up to par. As the cold weather progresses, the fescue grass will tend to harden off a little bit, and it'll be more of a task for the mower to make a good clean cut on it. So you want to make sure the blade's good and sharp too, and change the oil.
Yeah, it's
been a long hot summer.
It needs it.
Yeah, so
Change the oil, sharpen the blades.
Yeah, I do that twice a year on my mower, even though it says, oh, you never have to change the oil. Ha, bah. So he gets changed anyway. Good old synthetic 30 weight.
That'll do the job.
That's right. It works really well. Before putting your garden tools away, it's good to wash them a little bit, dry them up. And a little WD-40 on them will help them keep from getting rusty in the winter, especially your pruning shears. That sharp edge, you need to try to preserve it pretty well. And so it's a good idea to clean it up a little bit, put a little oil on it. So as the temperature goes up and down and up and down and out in the shed, water tends to stick to metal, stuff like that, and you will come up with a rusty pair of shears. But anyway, we'll have more for sale in the spring.
Come on by.
Okay. So also it's a good time right now to control broadleaf winter weeds, like a henbit and dandelions. A broadleaf weed control will work very well for both of those, or you can use some Roundup. It'll work on them too, especially in your dormant Bermuda grass or zoysia grass. I think at this point in time, the Bermuda grass is pretty well gone to bed for the winter. So it's not going to absorb the Roundup at this point. And the 2,4-D or Trimec, or there's some other broadleaf weed controls you can use for those also if you don't want to use the Roundup. It's important also to use a surfactant on each one of those. A surfactant is a chemical you add to the, like soap, you add to your spray. So it doesn't bounce off the leaves. A lot of these winter weeds are somewhat hairy, and the water has a negative charge and it tends to bounce off. Well, you need to change the electrical charge of the water by adding a surfactant, and it'll stick.
Nice.
That's why they call it spreader sticker.
Spreader sticker.
So use that on there too. Otherwise, your herbicide applications might be for naught if you don't do that. So, especially when your target pest is like that. Now, dandelions are a little bit different. They don't have as much hair on them, so the stuff tends to stick to them pretty well. So you'll put a dent in the Bartlesville Dandelion Festival next spring if you kill back your dandelion. I've got a lot of it in my yard too. I don't know where they're coming from.
It's out of nowhere. RKO.
No, from the south.
From the south.
I hope Kevin gets them all this year. keep the leaves off your fescue lawn to avoid damage to the foliage. We've had a little bit of wind and I pulled up some of the leaves in my yard yesterday, raked them up. I really just kind of blew them and vacuumed them. Actually, I did that. I bought this shredder thing. It's really nice. It vacuums your yard. It shreds the leaves, and I put them on the beds in the back. The shredded leaves look kind of nice. But anyway, I'm taking my neighbor's leaves too. Oh, I'll take them, sure.
Yes, all the leaves for Larry.
It makes good mulch, really. So anyway. Yeah. So keep the leaves off your fescue and maybe grind them up. I used my snapper mower too in the front yard last weekend. It's got a ninja blade on it.
Oh, wow.
And it turned the leaves to powder. It's amazing. Big old piles of leaves just run right over it and it's gone. Yeah, it's amazing how that works.
It sounds like the blade would be sharp too.
Extremely.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Them ninja blades.
So if you don't have that, you want to drain your lawnmower fuel tank, or just run it. I ran it dry last weekend, so that's why I ninja'd the front yard to run the gas out of it. And then it just had just enough. It just quit the very last section. So it did perfect. So
that's good. That's good.
So away it went. I got to pull the spark plug, put a little oil in it, and pull the rope. Don't put much oil in it. You don't want it to hydrolock. Just a little bit of oil, and that'll keep the interior from getting corroded. And if you can, make sure the piston's in the top dead center position and put the spark plug back in. There's less surface area for it to take on moisture. Well, I've had my mower for 30 years. Come on. It works fine.
You think you know something. Come on.
Yeah, it works fine.
Yeah.
So.
What else is going on, Larry?
Winterize the irrigation system. I get some calls, and most of my people have called back to winterize the system. It's a good idea to do that. Now, when we do an irrigation system, we put a insulated box in it. And actually, last year, a few of my customers forgot to do that, and the cold didn't bother them. These above-ground backflow preventers, the insulated box had enough insulating properties to keep it warm enough inside there to where they didn't freeze. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a problem. I was really surprised when they said, come turn it on. It lifts up the box. It was already on.
Oh, no.
So we turn on the timer. Everything's just fine. So anyway, it's very important for your irrigation system, especially if it's maybe an older one and you don't have an insulated box on the back door for winter. It's a good idea to have that winterized. It's a very simple process, really. By code, over by where it taps into the meter, there has to be a valve and a spring-loaded drain valve. We have a caller?
We do.
Put them on.
Good morning. You're on the Green Country Gardener. How can we help you?
Yes. I have this aloe vera. It's an indoor one.
Yes.
And it got overwatered, and it's rotting at the base.
Uh-oh.
Can I save it?
Yes. Yeah, take some of the leaves off of it and cut them. Cut them off of it. I say don't take all of them, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And let them sit for a few days. In other words, let it
dry out.
Let it callus. We call it that callusing over. And then those can be rooted in just a very light potting soil. Put a little rooting hormone on it. Put it in a fairly light potting soil. And you might, you keep it not wet, but kind of moist. And you should be able to get some more aloe vera plants. That's how they're propagated in the industry, is through cuttings. And
okay, then. I thought it was a goner, but I wondered if I could just lay it out and let it dry off, and then it would repot it.
Yeah, you could do that. You could go ahead and let it dry out and then repot it, and chances are it'll root in. But aloe veras, you need to put them in a fairly large pot because there's a lot of water in those leaves, and they tend to get kind of top-heavy. Mm-hmm. And let it dry out a whole lot between waterings.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. Yes, tissue culture propagation is a very good way. And we get a lot of those in. Actually, we get just cuttings in, and we root them ourselves. So anyway, back to what we're talking about. Winterizing the irrigation system, even though you might have an irrigation system that has a subterranean backflow preventer, you might want to make sure that you do drain it, because you don't know how cold it's going to get this winter. This last winter, it got down to 400 below zero for 6 weeks or something.
Right, that's exactly right.
And there was some freeze on the irrigation systems; those that were not either not properly installed or properly drained or something. So you want to make sure that is properly drained. Now, you could put some compressed air onto your backflow preventer and go ahead and run the system. I did that with one system this year. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
It blows all the water out. And air and water have, similar enough properties to where the electric valves will work with air along with water. So pretty cool how that works.
That is neat. We're talking with Larry Glass. This is the Green Country Gardener Program. It's 8:31. If you have any questions for Larry, you can reach us at 918-336-1400 or the toll-free number 1-800-749-5936. We'll take our second two-minute break. We'll be right back.
Isn't it good to know you can always rely on Peters True Value to have great bargains of the month? This month, Peters has Stanley Fat Max 25-foot by 1 1/4-inch tape rule for $14.99. Save $5 on black steel folding chairs, your price $14.99 each, and save $17 on a 6-foot deluxe folding table for $49.99. Get these and more bargains of the month and save, but only at Peters True Value in Dewey.
What we're going to do is we're going to build back winter. That's right. We'll build back winter. We're going to cover the roads and bridges with snow and ice.
Whatever kind of severe winter weather comes your way, we'll have you covered.
By banning the sun with clouds and darkness, we'll fight this climate crisis with freezing temperatures and wind chills. We're going to win.
We're your severe weather stations. Bartlesville Radio. We're here to prepare you, not scare you. Severe weather updates are brought to you by Patriot Auto, Bartlesville Collision Center, Paul's Record Service, Jericho Tile Incorporated, ConocoPhillips, United Rental, Phillips 66, Randy Lawrence Lawn Care and Maintenance Service, Stump Funeral Home and Crematory, A-Best Roofing, and Caney Sheet Metal Heat and Air. Bartlesville Radio, the one you trust.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. Hopefully you're having a good Saturday morning so far. Again, numbers to call if you have any questions regarding gardening. You can reach us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. We've talked about winterizing irrigation systems. Probably a good time to detach the hose too, right there, Larry?
You bet. And I see that in a lot of houses. I'll walk up and talk to them about their plants, and I say, you know, your hose is connected to the faucet. You better undo that.
It's time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. His water goes spewing in the house when they turn it on. A lot of our faucets on the wall have the valve actually inside the house. Oh, no, my house, the valve is 12 inches inside the house. And the water drains out of that. But you want to disconnect that, because I got caught when we first moved to the house, and I forgot. And there wasn't any water. There wasn't any ice. There wasn't any water leaking in the house when it turned off. But when I turned on the hose, well, it went under the sink, and we had this tidal wave going through the kitchen. So I forgot to let the hose on.
Oh, no.
And I just went to the store and bought a new faucet and put it in. I mean, this is pretty simple to do, but under the sink, yeah. If it's in a room that has sheetrock on it, you'll have to tear out the sheetrock and put the valve in.
Which would take some time.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound fun.
I've done that, too. But anyway, it's also time maybe to think about planning for your landscape. I've done a lot of those, and it's a good idea to have a roadmap to follow, which will kind of guide you through the landscaping process. It's very important to have, because it is kind of a big expense, to have a plan and have an idea how much it's going to cost and all that, so you can allocate your resources to pay for that. So you can also do it in phases, phase 1, 2, 3, and 4, or just 1 and 2. So it doesn't have to be done all at once. And a lot of times we just dig out the grass and all that and get the ground prepped, and people do it themselves too. That's another way to do it also. So some people say, I don't want to fool with it, you know. So, but
you got to.
So I've got some, actually for this time of year, I've got quite a few projects on the list to do. So we're busy.
Yeah, it's good. It's going to be busy around this
time. Yeah, to a point. Yeah, but anyway. So you want a good time to get a plan ready. And so I've got one right now. I'm communicating with somebody online about their plan back and forth, and so they can get kind of exactly what the budget calls for and all that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So think about planning for your landscape. And spring is a very popular time for that. And if you can get your foot in the door real early, it can be done real early in the spring and get it all done right away. So at that time. So. Anyway, that leads us to the tree of the week, which is one of my least favorite trees, is the pin oak. The pin oak is a straight grower despite its crooked youth. In other words, when it's young, you'll never find a straight pin oak when they're young. They're always crooked. They don't know which way they're going. That sounds familiar. But anyway, it does develop over time a strong central leader. And one disadvantage of it is the branch have a tendency to be somewhat descending on the lower part of the tree for a while, and it's in its middle ages, if you will. And that can cause some light starvation in the grass and cause some issues with erosion and so on, because not enough light. So you have to prune them up and all that. And this tree gets about 100 feet tall, about 40 feet wide. It's a good tall tree.
Yeah.
Really kind of nice. But one problem we have with it over here is it will not tolerate high pH or low iron soils. It's very intolerant of a limestone. If you live in an area that has limestone, this is not a tree you really want to plant. For one thing, it gets iron chlorosis real bad. And for some odd reason, my tree is diseased. What's wrong with it? Well, it's chlorotic. And that's characterized by a yellowing of the leaves in the center part of the leaves, and closer to the vein it'll be kind of green, but it'll be sort of a yellowish color.
Right.
So, okay, so what do I plant there? If you want something that's fairly similar, you might consider a Schumard oak. It's more tolerant of iron chlorosis than the pin oak, and it has more of an ascending branching habit, and they get to be just giant trees over time. And I've seen them growing in the worst case scenarios, doing quite well. So the leaf structure is kind of close to a pin oak, The acorns are just as obnoxious as a pin oak.
Acorns obnoxious? No.
So they have all the attributes of a pin oak, but they can tolerate the soil pH indifference very well. And sometimes it's hard to distinguish between the two. You have to look closely at the leaf. The pin oak is characterized by a very large or heavy sinus in the leaf. And the Schumacher oak has a shallower sinus. And the pin oak leaf tends to be more cross-shaped, crucifix cross-shaped, whereas the Schumacher oak has a little bit more uniform, but slightly cross-shaped leaf on it too. So sometimes it's difficult to tell the two sometimes, but those are the primary characteristics. But you have to be careful with your soil type and picking out a tree because there's so many variations in this town. Golly, you can go one place. Well, my neighbor's got a pin oak down the road. Yeah, but his house is not on a limestone shelf. Your house is, so it won't work here.
Really, one you got to move.
Another advantage of or disadvantage of the pin oak is it's a somewhat shallow root system. It has a kind of a shallow root system, and if there is a shallow underlying rock underneath it, it'll tend to swell the ground up to the point where the roots are exposed. Then you wind up putting these little round beds around them to keep the roots at bay. So they're not very deep rooted, not very deeply rooted, and they're not very tolerant of the high pH soils. You can probably apply supplemental iron to the soil, and that'll help them out somewhat. But as they get older, it'll become less effective to do that. So just plant a species that'll tolerate it. Okay. Another alternative species might be a swamp white oak, the Quercus alba. It's a really good tree, and it doesn't get the oak rot that's associated with a lot of the red oaks in this area, in our clay soil and some other parts. So that's a good alternative. It's not as pretty in the fall, but it'll tolerate it just fine, give you lots of shade. Okay.
Oh, I thought we had a caller, Larry. No? I apologize. Okay, I thought we had a caller. We do not. But if anybody has any questions, they can reach us at 918-336-1400 and 1-800-749-5936. And it does appear that our caller called back. We must have lost him for a minute. Good morning. You're on the Green Country Gardener Show.
Yeah. Hey, Larry.
Yeah.
I got a question for you, buddy. I've got some pecan trees, and needless to say, I didn't spray them, so you end up with worms in them.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of a systemic I can put on those trees in order to stop the worm situation in the summertime?
That's a tough call because pecan trees are so large, it'll take a lot of the material to work. But imidacloprid might stop some of that.
The worms, I'm satisfied, you know, something, a moth or something must carry them.
Yes.
Or lay the eggs in the pecans. Right. Where do they embed during the wintertime?
Now, those worms typically are underground at the point, and they crawl up the tree.
That's kind of what I thought. That's why I was wondering if I couldn't take care of them by some type of systemic.
Yeah. Now, the old-fashioned way is to use some adhesive-like stuff you put on the tree, and it'll stop them in their tracks. That's one way to do it. Some of the old-timers would put galvanized steel or a collar of galvanized steel around them where the animals can't crawl up.
Oh, really? Yeah. Definitely is an old-fashioned way.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But so, now, as far as the systemic, what was that chemical you mentioned?
Imidacloprid.
Imidacloprid. Uh-huh. Okay. Now, is that readily available, or is that something you have to have a special license for?
It's readily available. We've got it in the quart and the 2-quart and the 5-gallon size at the nursery for people. But
now, is that liquid?
Yeah, it's a liquid type. It's very easy to apply, actually. You mix it up with water and basically pour it on the ground.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what I was hoping for. You know, now as far as spraying them, you know, once they've embedded themselves in the fruit or in the nut,
yeah.
It doesn't do a hell of a lot of good then.
But right.
I'm just trying to stop it before it gets there. So we'll try that in the ground. Then.
Yeah. Another thing you can apply on the pecan trees, early or late in the middle of. Late spring, that's what I want to say, is thuricide, Bacillus thuringiensis.
Uh-huh.
That's a microbial type insecticide to which none of the worms have immunity. And it, uh-huh. it does a very good job of controlling them, too. You're not going to get absolute control no matter what you use. But you, okay. you can do a multifaceted approach to it and put a collar around the tree, some imidacloprid perhaps, and then use the thuricide as a topical application.
Okay. We just take the galvanized metal and just wrap it around the tree, I guess.
Yeah, that'll help stop the bagworms too, the tent worms.
Yeah. Well, the tent worms, now do they overwinter in the ground as well? They do, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they do, right.
Okay, very good. All right, well, thank you, sir. I appreciate your help.
Okay, thank you.
Larry, we do have another caller on the line. We will take that now. Good morning. You're on the Green Country Gardener program.
Good morning. I have a Macrophylla Nantucket blue hydrangea, and it's developed some brown spots on the leaves and even on the flowers. So I was wondering what to do.
That's Entomosporium. It is a bacterial type thing. And the best thing you can do is not plant it in an area that has a lot of humidity.
Uh-oh.
It's just endemic. So what you can do is take all the leaves that have fallen off of it in the fall, clean them up, and just get rid of them. Try to keep them clean around there and try to increase air circulation around the tree, around the plant. And also when watering it, use an application of water that is either very close to the surface or a drip irrigation to water them so they don't get water on them.
Yeah, I've got soaker hose on them.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a real bad problem this year, the Entomosporium or whatever it was, this leaf spot disease.
So just clean it up real good.
Yeah, keep it good and clean. And you can try some, it's worked for some people, but you have to be kind of diligent with it. But we do have some horticultural streptomycin, and that does help control bacterial infections like that pretty well.
Well, I tried copper fungicide, but it didn't seem to do much.
Yeah, I think probably because it's not a fungus.
Okay.
It's a bacterial thing.
Okay, and the only other question is, I tried some lemon thread false cypress, and
uh-huh.
most of the leaves fell off of that, dude. I wonder if I should give up. Or just let it go?
They're not very tolerant of rather rapid environmental changes. So it will adapt over time once it gets a good root system developed. So if there's anything left of it, don't give up on it yet. There are some pretty good specimens here in town.
All right. Well, thank you much.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye.
Larry, we probably should take another break. And we'll be right back with the Green Country Gardener program.
Okie dokie.
You've heard it said, I saw it on the radio. Well, that's true. But now the radio can be your computer, your smartphone, tablet, or any internet-connected device. Go to BartlesvilleRadio.com and click on the Listen Now button in the upper right-hand corner, and you won't miss a minute of news, sports, or entertainment. You can take us with you anywhere in the world. We're AM 1400, FM 93.3, and FM 95.1. K1, the one you trust, and your constant online companion.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is getting busy and getting ready for the holidays. You'll find new shipments of pansies and flowering kale. Get ready for the holidays with amaryllis bulbs and Christmas cactus that they have available. And check out their new shipments of trees and shrubs. Right now is a great time to sow fescue seed and apply pre-emergent for winter weeds. Come see what's new at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5 Sunday.
How many times have you asked yourself, what's the forecast for tomorrow? Just call the Weatherline Forecast Service, 918-336-2900, and find out. You get the forecast, plus the time and temperature from the studios of News Talk 1400 K1. We update the Weatherline as our forecast changes, so you're always up to date. Put that number in your phone and call 918-336-2900.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener. If you have any questions for Larry, you can reach us at 918-336-1400 or the toll-free number 1-800-749-5936. Larry, what can you tell us about houseplants?
Well, this time of year when things get a little cold and things don't grow very well outside for obvious reasons, people's minds or thoughts turn internally, and we do have a great selection of houseplants. Of which right now we have poinsettias in stock right now. Poinsettias are a very popular holiday plant. We have a good selection of those right now. And we have anything from philodendrons to aglaonemas to Ziziphus ferns and stuff.
Ziziphus. I like that.
All kinds of stuff, yeah. And we do have some rather rare plants as well. And that's become a bit of a hobby for some people, is acquiring and maintaining rare plants. Yeah, so we do have some of those. Last weekend, I wasn't on the air. I couldn't announce it, but we had a kind of a special on them, too, and a raffle for one plant. So anyway, so some of these rare plants can get a little pricey, too. So you want to make sure, if you do want to get on that realm of houseplants, that you know exactly, yeah, the right environment for some of these, because they can get very expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, like a week's pay for a plant, you know. So be very careful about these plants.
Those expensive house
plants. So anyway, we got some of those.
Christmas gifted.
Yeah, so we have some of the common ones too, so they're easy to grow. So they're kind of fun. But anyway, think about what you can do to make the inside of your house pretty. And we do have a good selection of them. We have a Christmas cactus as well too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they're sitting in the front window. We're getting them acclimated for the house environment by putting them in a window. So when you get them, they won't have this shock factor like, oh, my God.
Yeah. What is happening?
Yeah. They go, oh, yeah, I just got moved a little bit. You know, they won't know the difference. So anyway, so come check it out and see what. Now, there's some of these plants, so you have to be kind of careful about the humidity in the house, too. And when it's cold, it gets rather dry, because when the heat expands, the water molecules or water droplets are further apart, too, so the humidity is lower. So have a mister handy, or a missus, whatever. But anyway, but try not to overdo it. You want to let them dry out between mistings, if you will. So you might give them a bit of a mist on the colder part of the day when the humidity is at its lowest. And light is very important, too. Have a good sunny window. Or one thing that was popular a while back were these window replacement greenhouse things. Hmm. We had one in a house we rented here in town before we bought one. It's really nice. Just above the kitchen sink, there's this little shelves in it and all that. And you have all kinds of plants. And it's pretty cool.
That's cool.
So I don't know if you can still get those or not, but they're kind of fun.
It's worth looking into.
You bet. And also, perhaps maybe even put cover the patio with a sunroom, too.
Hmm.
You've got these heat pump things that'll do a very good job keeping it warm, and you'll have this tropical paradise over your patio. That'd be kind of nice. That'd be kind of hard in my house. My patio is kind of round.
Yeah, that's kind of difficult.
Kind of cool looking too.
Yeah, because
anyway, so we have some really good, and most of your house plants do like a very good kind of great potting soil. We have a product we call just BM1, and it's a it's what we've been using for, 40 years. And we've had very good luck with it in our greenhouse. And with our plants in the greenhouse, they do very well with it. And a potting soil, the type of potting soil is very important. You want to kind of grab it and squeeze it. It should be somewhat resilient. And a peat-based potting soil is really good with some perlite and some vermiculite in it, just so the root system doesn't get swamped.
Right.
So one thing you notice when you go into the greenhouse also is the plants have no saucer underneath them, with the exception of a few. And the water runs through them onto the ground. Well, you don't want that on your hardwood floors.
Right.
So you could put them over a fairly large saucer with some rocks in it, some gravel, pea gravel. We got a big old pile of pea gravel out back. You can grab a handful of that while you're getting your houseplant in the saucer. And then let it rest up on top of the saucer so the bottom of the pot doesn't sit in the water. It drains through. And then it goes into the stones. And then with the lower humidity, the rate of evapotranspiration is higher, so it'll give some humidity to the plants too. So a double-edged sword right there. So when you but when you get a house plant and you get a saucer, get a saucer that's too big.
Sounds like a good problem to have. Yeah.
So so it will run into the water, will run into there, and it'll evaporate out. So if you get one that just fits the pot, it doesn't do much good. You want one that's too big. And grab a handful of 3/8-inch, real tiny little gravel we have in the back too.
Sounds good.
We'll be glad to bring a bag. We'll just fill it up. It won't charge you anything. It doesn't cost much.
Make it work.
So anyway, that's kind of it with houseplants. So number one, use a good potting soil. Number two, you might use a fertilizer that's a slow release, such as Osmocote. And number three, make sure they have lots of light in the area where they're growing, and make sure you kind of rotate them and keep them symmetrical growing. And number four, don't let them sit in water between waterings. It's not a good, healthy plan for your houseplants.
We're talking with Larry Glass. It's 8:54. This is the Green Country Gardener program. We'll take our last break. We'll be right back.
The original Waldorf Astoria Hotel on Fifth Avenue in New York City was built in 1893. Constructed in the German Renaissance style, the hotel had 450 guest rooms and another 100 rooms for staff and servants. After merging with their next-door neighbor, the Astoria Hotel, in 1897, the hotel had 1,300 rooms, making it the largest hotel in the world at the time. The Empire Room at the hotel was the largest and most lavishly decorated room in the Waldorf, and quickly became one of the finest restaurants in New York City. From the beginning, the Waldorf was the must-stay place for foreign dignitaries from around the world. Some of those guests were the leaders of China, the Prince of Siam, the Grand Duchess of Russia, and many others. Andrew Carnegie was a regular guest at the hotel, and the Waldorf Astoria Bar became a favorite haunt for many of the financial elite, such as Diamond Jim Brady, Buffalo Bill Cody, and Bat Masterson. In short, anyone who was anyone in the world of politics, society, business, or entertainment wanted to be seen at the Waldorf. It truly was the world's hotel. Following the tragic sinking of the Titanic, the Waldorf Hotel was the official site for the inquiry that was performed by the United States Senate into the disaster. With this backdrop, our very own Frank Phillips was a major player at the Waldorf. In 1929, a private corporation was formed by Uncle Frank, and he became part owner of the Waldorf. Later that year, they sold the buildings and the land to a corporation named Empire State, Inc. Their plan was to demolish the hotel, which they did, and build the Empire State Building in that location. In July of 1929, prior to the demolition, Frank Phillips inspected the hotel and paid particular attention to four handsome chandeliers which hung in the tap room of the hotel. When the hotel was gutted in preparation for the demolition, Frank was given those ornate lights. He promptly shipped them to Oklahoma and had them hung in the great living room of the Willow Rock Lodge, where they illuminated family gatherings, business meetings, cocktail parties, poker games, and many other social events. Whenever asked by guests about the lights, Frank liked to joke and say they were all that he got out of his investment, calling them his million-dollar chandeliers and declaring them the most expensive in the country. The magic of New York City and the Waldorf Astoria from 1893 is still part of the lodge today and the wonderful history of Willow Rock. That same magic still exists. Welcome home to Willow Rock.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener program. It's 8:57. We're talking with Larry Glass. Larry, what else is happening?
Well, annuals. It's possible to have color all year with the proper planting of annuals. Now, about a month ago, you should have planted your pansies. We still have some at the nursery. They might make it if it doesn't get too cold, but you can still plant them.
Well, we got a warm week ahead, so.
Yeah, it'd be a good time to get those roots established. Good time to plant some shrubs, too. So, anyway. And mulch also is very important. If your plants, your shrubs, especially if they're new, they need to have a good 2-3-inch layer of mulch on the surface at this point. Just to keep, it's not going to rain,
I don't think there's any rain.
For about 3 or 4 months now.
So far, yeah.
So your stuff's going to dry out, so you want to watch very carefully your newly planted shrubs, too. If they've been in the ground, say, less than a month, the root system just isn't quite out far enough for them to really do well in a dry soil, especially if it's real windy and cold like it's going to be. So make sure, even if you've winterized your hose, make sure to check it out, and then water your plants and, you know, roll the hose back up. So.
What else has happened at the nursery?
Oh, at the nursery, like I said, we got good house plants right now. Got a good selection of trees and good fall color we've had, and even some good evergreen stuff, and more stuff coming in all the time. Even though this time of year we've got a good selection of shrubs and azaleas and whatnot, and bulk mulch is kind of cool. It's cheap. We'll bring it up in our big old truck and dump it in your driveway for you, and it's kind of cool to do that, I guess. But anyway, you want to make sure your stuff is mulched and ready for the winter and all that. A great selection of house plants, fertilizers, interior and exterior type fertilizers too, as well as weed control, et cetera, for your yard and garden in the winter.
Where can people find you?
We're on No Water Road, south side of the road, halfway between Madison and the construction zone. That's been a mess. We'll talk at you later. Keep that shovel sharp.
Dignity, compassion, excellence. Stump Funeral Home and Crematory, Bartlesville, Nowata, Barnstall.
KWON, Bartlesville. K227TQ, Bartlesville. K23.